I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Blog Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, July 27th, 2017. This is PWTorch.com's post-GFW Impact livecast. I am PWTorch.com's Mike McMahon with PWTorch.com's Andrew Socek. Andrew, how are you tonight?
Mike, I'm doing good, except for I think that is one of the dumbest main events I've ever seen in Impact history.
I had some problems with it, too. Yeah, let's get to it. We got a lot to talk about. We're going to start talking about the main event. We also need to talk about Ed Nordholm, who had an interview with Sports Illustrated earlier this week. He hit on a lot of topics, including the Matt Hardy situation and some of the stuff we talked about last week with royalties and them taking a percentage on bookings. Then also, I want to talk about the Bruce Pritchard Dutch Mantel conference call a little bit. That happened on yesterday. And then everything about this week's episode of Impact. So a lot to talk about. You can give us a call at 515-605-9345. Just make sure you hit the number one, and that will put you in the caller queue. But let's get right to it and talk about this main event. I had a lot of issues with it. Not so much the match itself, more to do with the stuff that happened after the match. But what were your thoughts on what we just saw there, the last 15 or so minutes of Impact?
I mean, I guess just for months now, I've been saying LAX is like the coolest thing on Impact. I think they are far and away the coolest thing on Impact. And just to see a former WWE guy come in there and just slay all these, you know, kind of TNA, GFW originals. It's just disheartening that they keep doing stuff like this. I mean, I know they booked it like a month ago, but it just looks worse now due to the whole, you know, controversy with Paige and whatnot. But even still, one guy should not be just defeating an entire stable by himself. It just has an effect on everything in my mind.
I agree. So if you missed it, if you didn't watch the show this week, what we're talking about is they booked El Patron against LAX in a gauntlet match to main event the show. El Patron beats Homicide in literally 15 seconds to open the gauntlet match. He then beats Ortiz. Then he's in the middle of his match against Santana. LAX ends up jumping him, causing a DQ. So El Patron gets the win in about 10 minutes through disqualification. And after that, all of LAX hits the ring. They start to beat down El Patron. They tie his hands behind his back. El Patron's brother comes out, gets beat down by LAX. His father comes out and gets sort of held off. He doesn't get in the ring. That's because the Veterans of War come down. They hit the ring, and they are almost immediately engulfed by LAX as well. And then El Patron gets his hands on a chair, gets his hands free, then gets his hands on a chair, and he ends up sort of chasing off the entire stable by himself. So my issues were similar to yours. First of all, Veterans of War, no offense, they have no business being in a main event angle. They haven't been treated anything close to being, even though it was an angle after the match, I didn't think they were a good fit here at all. It really made no sense to me. And then, I mean, they had a little bit of history with LAX, and maybe that's the play, but still, it's just they haven't been treated like main eventers. So their involvement was sort of, whatever. And then also, like you said, so they hit the ring and they immediately get beat up, and El Patron is booked like, you know, Super Cena. He gets up with the chair, and all of a sudden, he's chasing off everybody. And I don't think that's the way to go in 2017, regardless, having the big superhero babyface. If you're going to do it, I don't think you should do it with Alberto El Patron. So I have a couple issues with it there. But yeah, the whole thing just seemed really out of place. And honestly, I don't know about you, but for me, ruined what I thought was, up to that point, a pretty good show.
Yeah, it was definitely an improvement over the past few weeks, I felt. Not a great show, but there was definitely some things that I liked about it. Just to further that last angle, it wasn't just the fact that he beat them all, but they cheated throughout the entire match. So, like, like you said, he was Super Cena from 2008 or 2010. It was just unbelievable. I just found that to be so frustrating, how he just swatted them all like children.
Yeah, it was really strange, you know, just the way they booked it, because I wouldn't say that El Patron's been booked like that really much at all. I mean, he's been booked as the big strong babyface, don't get me wrong, but he hasn't really been booked to look like this superhero like he was, you know, like he was here.
Yeah, I think like a week or so ago, he kind of fought the group off by himself. When he was going to join the group.
That's true. No, that's true. Yeah. Just last week.
Yeah. So maybe you could say, oh, he got the jump on him that time. But this time, there's no excuse for him just one-on-one-on-one, even when they double, triple teamed him, to just get up like that. So it's just really, really disappointing how they kind of just defined down LAX like that.
Yeah. To be honest with you, I'm not sure where they go with this. You know, what's the end game? So this is twice now, 2 weeks in a row. Well, last week, Conan was trying to get El Patron to join LAX. And now this week, there was going to be the retribution for him not joining LAX. But if all it is El Patron continuing to get the upper hand, where do they go? Like, you know, where's the heat? I just don't know where it is. You know, at least last week, you could say, well, LAX is beating up his family and everything. But still, at the end of the show, El Patron is standing tall. Again here tonight, the odds are stacked against him. It's a gauntlet match. At the end of the show, El Patron's the one standing tall. So where do you think this leads? I just don't see any way that this leads to something good right now. And right, I mean, if anything, I think it's hurting LAX. They don't have any heat. Every time it looks like they're going to do something, they sort of get outsmarted and one-upped them.
You know, all I can really think of is that it'll lead to some sort of match with El Patron, his brother, and Veterans of War versus LAX. But what's the point? He just beat them all up by himself. He does not need partners. So I don't know. I just kind of looking at the past of LAX, the reason they got over in the first place like a decade ago was because they beat the crap out of guys like AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels and won all these squash matches. And it's like they're not bothering to go to that again. They're just saying, hey, take these guys seriously, even though we're not going to give them any credible wins. In fact, we're going to make them look like a bunch of stooges every week. So, it's just frustrating to watch.
Let's talk a little bit about the Ed Nordholm interview. Ed Nordholm, who is the executive vice president of Anthem Sports, he did an interview with Justin Barrasso of Sports Illustrated earlier this week. It's actually published on Wednesday. And again, if you've read this interview already and you want to talk about it, you can do so by giving us a call at 515-605-9345. He touched on a couple of things here. He talked a lot about the Matt Hardy, Jeff Hardy, Broken Universe situation, which, you know, really, I didn't think there was any new information there. A lot of it was stuff we already knew. One of the quotes here is, and this is Nordholm says, quote, because Matt Hardy, his brother, and his wife all have signed contracts that sign over the rights to the IP. That is the fundamental term of every term for every wrestler on our show. That's a fundamental term for every wrestler with WWE. And that is the same contract that Ring of Honor has. It's really not up for debate. So their contention all along has been that they own the IP, and we've been over it, you know, a million times. I don't think there's much that we learned there. There really wasn't anything new. But one of the things they also discussed was something that we talked about last week, and that is the fact that Anthem is taking 10% on outside bookings, number one, and also that they are not giving royalties for merchandising. That's something that was brought up. It was something that we heard about last week, and we discussed it a little bit. So I'm trying to look up the quote exactly here. And where is it? Got to cut through some of the crap because he leads it up talking about his roster. Okay, so here it is. Here's Ed Nordholm's response, and I want to get some reaction to this on why they are taking a booking fee and why they don't give royalties. He says this, and I quote, "I will say that the issue with respect to the royalties is somewhat of an odd one. It's been a TNA Impact Wrestling element of their contracts since day one, for years and years, basically. All the wrestlers get a payout on royalty opportunity as part of their compensation structure, and it always has been. That's not a new rule with us at all. On the participation on outside bookings, we do a service for them that we didn't do in the past. Part of that is we take on the responsibility of helping them with their bookings, trying to upgrade the quality of their bookings, making sure they get paid. We deal with the promotions and making sure they get paid, and that value that they bring to them as people that they are on TV. It's not like it's just a money grab. We're working with them in a way that the previous organization didn't. We've got talented people that are out actively trying to find bookings for them. I pay those guys salary for the effort they put into getting them bookings and making sure that they get paid for them." End quote. So there's a couple things here. And I know last week I said that I didn't like the fact that they take 10% of their bookings. I think it's one thing if you're going to act as a booking agent. If you're acting as the booking agent and the talent agrees to that, then fine, take 10%. That's how it works. I mean, there's other guys out there that work as booking agents. There's plenty of guys. I think Bill Behrens is one that a lot of guys use, and I don't know what percentage he takes, but he's the booking agent. So if he gets a booking, I'm sure he gets a percentage of that. That's all fine. And I'm sure some guys say, you know what, I don't want to deal with the aggravation. Get me the booking, take your 10%, and I don't want to deal with any of it. Just tell me where I'm going. Send me my plane ticket. But what I have a problem with a little bit is, what if the guys don't want to do that? You know, I could see Bobby Lashley, who's probably going to command several thousands of dollars per outside booking, saying, yeah, you know what, take percent, you handle everything, I don't want to deal with it. But, you know, a Robbie E, let's say, who's not making that, $5,000 per booking, if he doesn't want to give GFW 10% and he wants to handle his own bookings, is he allowed to? That would be my question. Or are they contractually obligated to go through GFW for their outside bookings? I think that's two very different things. Because at the end of the day, if these guys are truly, and I'm putting up air quotes here, independent contractors, and I'm using the air quotes because, in my opinion, they're not independent contractors, they're employees. If they're truly independent contractors, they should be able to say, no, I don't want to use you. I'd rather retain that 10% myself and I'll book myself. I don't know if that's necessarily the case.
I think that's the key issue, too. I mean, is this like an opt-in? Do they have to do it? And it just makes me wonder, too, say like a guy like Caleb Conley, who has disappeared for weeks, like why should he have to pay 10% when he's not on as much as a regular wrestler? So what's their standard for that? How, you know, do you have to be on every other week? But I'm sure it's just any sort of contract. I have no idea how difficult it is for a wrestler to book themselves, but I mean, they've been doing it for decades. So the fact that he's saying it's not a money grab, well, then why are you doing it? You're doing it to make a profit and to, get that 10% from the wrestlers. So you're not doing it to just for the brand or just to break even. You're doing it to make money.
Yeah. And you know, I guess I see his point in the sense that, okay, he's hired people to work as the booking agents. They need to generate some money to pay those salaries. Okay, no, that's fine. But like you said, it's all a matter of whether or not it's an opt-in or are they forced to go through GFW for their bookings. Because that's a big difference to me. And I'm sure I could talk for hours about how they're not really independent contractors and they're actually employees and they should be treated as such. But that's sort of a different topic for another day. It's part of that whole conversation. You know, if they're an employee, then you can say you have to go through our booking agent. You're an employee. That's part of being an employee. But if you're truly an independent contractor, they can't tell you. They don't have any control over what else you do. You know, if I'm an independent contractor, you know, for example, and this, you know, has never been the case, obviously, but for example, my editor anywhere, Wade Keller, can't say, no, you can't work for these people. Like, I'm an independent contractor. My editor at my other job, when I cover college hockey, he can't tell me, oh, you can't do work for PW Torch. That's not how being an independent contractor works. So my other concern here is, part of what Ed Nornholm said here is that they're upgrading the quality of their bookings. So does GFW, this is a question we don't have the answer to, but does GFW have the ability to take a phone call from XYZ indie organization, and let's say they go, okay, you know, we want to book Bobby Lashley, and we're going to pay, say his book, I don't know what the numbers are, but say his booking fee is $5,000. So small indie promotion, XYZ Wrestling calls, and they say, we want to pay Bobby Lashley $5,000. That's his book. That's his fee. We want to pay him. We want to have him come out and wrestle whoever. Does GFW have the ability to say no on Lashley's behalf? Because that's another part of this that I think can't be overlooked. If he's talking about how they're upgrading the quality of their bookings, it's one thing to take 10%. It's another thing for a guy to have an opportunity to make money and then lose 100% because GFW says, no, your organization isn't big enough. That stood out to me, where he talked about the quality of their booking. I don't know if it's happening or if it's not, so it's unfair to speculate, but that would be a concern of mine, because now it's not just 10%. Now you're potentially costing some guys 100%.
That stood out to me, too. In my mind, I feel he's just saying that to make it sound better, like we're going to take more prestigious shows, whatever that means. Like, you know, if somebody has $5,000 to book somebody like that, I just can't imagine them saying no, you know, like, why would he turn down? Why would they turn that down? Unless, like, you know, even if a show is only going to draw like 100 people, are they going to do that much research into it so it doesn't harm their image or something? I have no idea what he really meant like that. And I can't see them enforcing that.
I mean, I would hope not. At the end of the day, money's money. And for a company that isn't generating a lot of it, you would hope, if they're going to control this stuff, I would hope that they give their guys the opportunity to make as much money as they can. And it shouldn't, at the end of the day, you know, it shouldn't matter the size of the show. It shouldn't matter if there's four people there. If the people are willing to pay and you get paid up front and the money's there and you know they're not going to get screwed, then if the guys want to go, they should go, you know, and GFW really shouldn't have any say over it.
Yeah, that's so strange, too, because if they're handling the bookings, I guess they're setting the price then. So, I mean, what if Robbie E was comfortable just throwing out numbers? He's like, yeah, I would work a show for $500. Is GFW then going to jump in and be like, no, you have to pay $800 to get Robbie E?
Yeah.
And so he just misses out on that payday completely.
That's what concerns me, you know, at the end of the day, because these guys, they should be able to allow, they're independent contractors, they should be able to make as much money as they want. And I don't understand legally. You know, I think I've mentioned this on the show before. The member of my family has their own business, was sued over this exact topic. And I was educated on it quite a bit. And it wasn't intentional. He had a guy who asked him to be paid. He was a temporary employee. He asked to be paid as an independent contractor, as a 1099. So my member of my family did what he was asked of. He paid the guy as a 1099. The guy sued him for misclassification and won. It's to me, it's pretty cut and dry. They're employees. And I think that's why WWE tried to, or did, you know, settle with CM Punk as quickly as they did. And even Punk has alluded to this. You know, Punk said, my lawsuit was going to change the way that they had to conduct their business. You know, I'm not a lawyer, but I just feel like at least in the state of Massachusetts, maybe it's different in every state, but if anybody ever contested it in the state of Massachusetts, I'm pretty sure they would lose. Or they would win. The company would lose. Let's go to a quick break, though. We got a lot to talk about. We got a couple of callers on the line. You can give us a call at 515-605-9345. Andrew and I will get to your calls and a lot more. Our top three a little later on tonight, the three departures that hurt TNA the most. That's, of course, a timely topic with Davey Richards, Matt Morgan, and Magnus all being released or leaving the company over the course of the last week or so. So we'll have our top three list later on. Your phone calls, all right after the break here in the PW Torch Livecast.
Hello, you people. I'm Pat McNeil. Every Sunday night, Greg Parks and I will bring you Wrestling Night in America here on PW Torch Livecast. We're on at 8 p.m. Eastern most weeks or immediately following the night's pay-per-view. We'll talk Raw, SmackDown, NXT, GFW, New Japan, Ring of Honor, WWN, and all the latest wrestling news with your phone calls. So don't miss it. Be there.
All right, back here in the PW Torch Livecast. Let's get right to the phone calls. Let's go up first to Kylan in New Jersey. Kylan, how are you?
I'm very well, Mike. How are you and Andrew doing this week?
Doing good.
Yeah, pretty good. What do you got for us tonight?
Great. The first thing, kind of a light topic, but I couldn't believe that he was assigned to do this. Did Mayor Buddy Dyer really announce Moose as representing Moose Nation?
He did. I caught that too and got a chuckle out of it, yeah.
Seriously, Moose Nation.
Hey, it's a mythical land that no one has been able to discover yet.
I'm to serious stuff now. Question number one concerns the Global Force departure, which I believe you just said you wanted to bring up anyway.
Yep. No, our top three later on in the show is going to be the top three departures that hurt TNA the most throughout their history. So, absolutely. Hey, guy.
I think we...
Oh, there he is.
I'm back. I have no idea what happened there. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, you're just fine. Did you hear his question?
I heard nothing. No, Skype disconnected on me, so I dropped off and just came back on.
Oh, okay. I'll just answer it, and you can jump on.
Sure.
As for who will be the number, say, three heel in the company, since Davey Richards is leaving, I would say probably Eli Drake, but they really need to get him away from Chris Adonis at the moment. Luckily, this is a good thing. The Swole guys weren't on tonight, so that's a positive.
I applauded that.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, guys coming in, so Matt Morgan left, Davey Richards left, and Magnus. I think they're going to make that heavy push for Rey Mysterio. They mentioned him again tonight, and I think that's like 4 weeks in a row. So they're really trying to court him, and he would probably cost more than all of those three guys combined times two, I would guess. Otherwise, they ran those vignettes for the new tag team tonight, and they'll probably just keep reaching out to random indie guys. I just don't know how many free agents there are out there right now who would really make some sort of splash. So I think they'll try to go big with Mysterio or otherwise just random indie guys.
Okay, question number two. Since we are 3 weeks away from what certain people believe to be the official rebranding into Global Force Wrestling, what are you two most looking forward to on that particular episode of Impact?
You know, I'm looking forward to seeing if they give the show a little bit of a new look. I don't know if it's if they go with sort of the amped style set. I know they had this is a small change, but they had like the bright green ropes, for instance. That would be something that WWE doesn't use. Even the blue ones now, you know, SmackDown has gone back to doing that. But I think a new look would be good, even if it was a new stage, new ring, at least a new look to the ring, but just some sort of new feel, a new look to make the show feel different. Because the set, you know, they're in the Impact Zone, so what can they really do to make it look different? But something to make it visually look different, I think, would be a welcome change. How about you, Andrew?
Yeah, They definitely do need to change the look of that show, because it has looked the same since really like the Hogan Bischoff era, when they kind of changed everything blue.
Yeah, I'm sorry, not to interrupt, but I was actually watching a clip, or not a clip, it was a show on their Pluto TV channel, the streaming channel, and they were showing one of the one night onlys from 2014. So it's been 3 years ago, and the building looked exactly the same.
Yeah, it's the thing is, if you watch Impact from like 2006, 2007, it looked better then. It's better lit. The crowd's more excited. It somehow has gone down, so in production value. So I'd like to see them do something. I don't know if they have the money for that. Otherwise, I don't know. I just like creatively, I think it's going to be pretty much the same. It's going to be relatively the same amount of wrestlers. I don't think Mysterio can come in until September-ish or maybe even later due to his Lucha Underground contract. So I don't know if there's any big names out there that they could bring in for that show. So I'm just going to guess it's just going to feel pretty much the same as it is now.
To fill that piece in for you, and Ray is gonna be on the last episode of the season for Lucha Underground, which is going to air at the end of September. So the earliest Ray could come in would be right around Christmas, which would put him as not being able to come in until the first of the year, pretty much.
Yeah, I believe believe it's 90 days after that episode airs.
Which would be right around Christmas.
Yeah, no, it would be. Yeah, you're right. Right around the end of the year. Anything else on your mind tonight?
And my final question concerns up and coming wrestlers and why certain people might be being pushed at this point. In the surprise move of the year by Global Force officials, we're going to be getting Bobby Lashley versus Matt Sydal in 3 weeks. Why do you suppose Global Force officials have gone in this direction, even though Matt Sydal has never been used as a main eventer, unless you count 2 weeks of him being John Cena's friend 6 years ago, and Vince McMahon all of a sudden saying, "I hate this guy, let's push him back down the card."
What do you think?
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I know. What do you think there, Andrew?
I don't get it either. In the hit list last week, I wrote the same thing. Like, if Matt Sydal was going to be a top guy, it would have happened at some point in the past 13 years. Great wrestler. I'm totally fine with him on the roster being a mid-card X-Division guy. But he's just, tonight should have been like a star-making moment when he came in and knocked down Lashley and hit him with the Shooting Star Press. Nobody cared. Like, it did not get a pop. I don't like his music. I don't get that. I don't see it, anything in him at that level. How about you, Mike?
You know, I think at this point it's just they're trying to find someone new for Lashley, because Lashley's been on the roster for so long and there hasn't been a lot of turnover in the roster. So there's really, on the babyface side, I don't know who else you could put there. Maybe Moose? But he's got a different chance. They'd have to take the Grand Championship off his waist, I think, right now. Because I don't think you want Lashley feuding over the Grand Championship. So I think part of it is they just really don't have anyone else to put there. But I think, you know, my biggest problem with it is I think it could work, but it's so close, less than a year, to Lashley, Eddie Edwards. And that was the same matchup, the same sort of feud, the big guy against the little guy and the high flyer. And I just think it's going to feel too similar to what they did. If they didn't do that feud with Eddie Edwards in the fall of last year, I think that this might feel a little fresher than it does. But, you know, Eddie Edwards and Lashley were feuding not only into the fall, but I think into the first of the year. So it just, it doesn't, it feels sort of like a retread of what they did just a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago.
It's a shame that they got rid of Magnus and Matt Morgan, because that could have filled out 3 months worth of programs.
Oh, yeah,
so,
right.
And then maybe try to find, and then try to build somebody else up in the meantime. Because that's a great point about Eddie Edwards. It's not clicking for me at the moment.
Anything else, Kylan?
Nope. That'll be all for this week, guys. Talk to you next week.
All right. Sounds good.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
You too, guys.
All right. That was Kylan in New Jersey, a regular caller here on the post-GFW Impact livecast. We'll go to our next caller. You can give us a call at 515-605-9345. I believe this is Vinny. Vinny, is this you?
Yeah, this is me. How you guys doing tonight?
Not bad. How you doing?
Okay.
Good. Hey, I haven't watched the show. I'm trying to, like, not listen to you guys, but at the same time, I'm going to catch it now. I wanted to bring up two things to you guys, and I don't know if you guys have touched on the Hardy situation with the IP scenario. I want to give my opinion. I like to give you guys the questions, but I want to give you guys just a tidbit of info. And I,
sure thing.
I understand GFW is in an interesting place from public opinion. A lot of people want to bash the company. A lot of people want to just kind of give them the finger. And it seems like for wrestling fans, they're kind of just a pinata to beat up on. And I get it. A lot of it's warranted. But I think in this situation, I'm siding with them. Now, I work for a rapper out of New York. And in 2006, 2007, Madden, they had reached out for him to do a song for Madden. And at the time, the rights were signed over to EA Sports at the time, who ended up putting the record on the video game. And that record was sold, of course, Xbox, PlayStation, the whole nine. So fast forward a few years ago, NFL had reached out to us to get the record. And at the time we said, well, we don't own it. EA Sports owns it. So there had been some conversation about them. They wanted to use it for the NFL Honors Awards show. And all they were going to do is play it, you know, play it with some, it was like the theme show of the show. If you guys can, get that piece of it.
Yep.
So, what I do is, you know, I talk with certain people to get things going. Now, at the time, the IP was with EA Sports, and what ended up happening was we couldn't get a hold of the original producer of the record. So what we decided to do is reproduce it and basically have the NFL buy out the masters from EA, and now they own it. So just to kind of give people some insight is that, you know, think that – for me, when I look at it from that angle, being in the music industry and seeing kind of this same IP come up with for a wrestling company, I think GFW really has to stand on their foot and say, hey, look, you guys can have it. Just pay for it, you know,
yeah.
And go that route. And I read a report. I don't know the cost involved with all of that. I think my real question, and hopefully we can figure it out sooner than later, but, you know, what is the, I guess, what's the pushback from the Hardy's end of purchasing it to own it, you know? Because at the end of the day, if GFW owns it, that payout might be a lot, but it'll be worth it for the Hardy's in the end of the day because hopefully they can keep it. And I don't know how WWE's IP works, if they can keep it, if they leave WWE and take it elsewhere, but it just seems like it's very... I'm seeing it now to where I'm a little upset with the Hardys kind of just trying to spin it because the fans are going to get behind it and they're going to say FGFW, they're assholes, they're not doing the right thing. But in all reality, I I with them, you know, I'm happy that they're kind of keeping their foot on it. I think it's bad timing though, and I think it makes them look kind of crazy at the same time, but I think for people to understand, you know, cut the check, you know, cut the check and get it taken care of. You know, you might not agree with the way the contract was. And I know that there was some talk at least this week where, you know, Ed had said in an interview, well, hey, you know, our contracts are standard. And I have a friend that worked for Impact. And he was one of the guys we just talked about who left. Me and Matt Morgan have had some rapport over the years. And it's the same situation where, you know, if he signed the contract, you know, his IP is going to be taken. And if he wants it, he gets that permission to take it. So I just want to give my thoughts on that to you guys. I mean, I don't know how you feel about it now with all the stuff coming out this week, but it just seems the Hardys are kind of playing to the fans. Hey, go against GFW. And they're just really doing what a publisher and a writer would do with, you know, a theme song or an intro video, you know. So I just want to throw that out there, and then I'll get to my second question I want to throw at you guys.
Yeah, no, sure. I've always sort of said from the beginning that I don't think GFW is doing anything wrong. I think they do own it. I mean, at the end of the day, they do. And they shouldn't just give it away. And I think the big – at least my impression is the contention from the Hardy side at first was that, well, we created it, so it should just be given to us. And it's like, well no. You know, that's not how this works. I'm sure there, to bring up your example, I'm sure you've worked with artists who maybe they write a song, but when you – when the publisher publishes it or when you sign away the IP, you don't own it anymore. Just because you created it doesn't mean you always have ownership to it. So you're right. The timing is bad. The PR is bad. But I don't think GFW has done anything wrong. And at the end of the day, like if they were to just give it away, and I think some fans' opinion is, well, they should just, if the Hardys were the creative force behind it, they should just give it to them. And I think, you know, people in GFW would have an argument over, okay, who's really the ultimate creators? The Hardys certainly had a role, but so did other people. That number one. Number two, yeah. I don't think they should be in the business of setting the precedent of just giving something away, because then who's to say that, you know, anybody who knows what could be brought, any character that they develop, who's to say that when that person leaves, they don't go and say, well, you gave the Hardys theirs. You know, why can't I have my gimmick? You know, you gave them theirs.
Right.
You know, Rosemary wasn't Rosemary before GFW. She signs a WWE contract. She's not going to be Rosemary, and she shouldn't be. So it's sort of, and I'm sure she had elements of developing that character, and she had created some of it herself, but it's not how it works. So that's sort of my feeling on it. And Andrew, I think we've talked about it too in the past, how the timing is bad. And from a PR standpoint, they're getting hammered, but really, I'm not sure they're doing anything wrong.
No, I agree. I think they both sides look bad at this point.
I agree there. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, just tonight, Matt Hardy was, you know, tweeting about it. Rebby Sky was on Pro Wrestling Cheat Radio. I haven't listened to it yet. I'm sure it wasn't very nice things to say about Ed Nordholm. I've seen like the $10,000 and $15,000 number thrown out that they could have bought it for. I don't know if that's true or not, but if it was, they should have gone in on that a long time ago, because they would have made that over many times over already in merchandising.
Absolutely.
WWE. My guess is just like, it's, you know, they're very proud people. They're very, you know, artistic creation. They probably just think it should be ours. So they probably thought that was a slap in the face, and they felt maybe like if they paid that money, they'd be caving to Impact. So I don't know why they didn't just go for that if that was deal, or even if it was $50,000, they should have gone for it.
The other thing too, just to bring up quickly, I know in that that Sports Illustrated interview, Ed Nordholm talked a lot about the issue at the beginning part of the interview. You can see it on SI.com. But the other thing he said was, in the new contracts that they offered the Hardys, and I thought this has nothing really to do with the IP, but I found it interesting given these negotiations. According to Ed Nordholm, they had agreed in principle to re-sign Matt Hardy. And then 3 days before those March, I think it was the March tapings, 3 days before, it was on, he said it was on the Sunday and they were going to start taping on the Thursday, he got a phone call from Matt Hardy, and Matt Hardy said he needed $100,000 more per year. And Ed Nordholm said, well, I can't afford that. And then the separation happens. So, I could see where Ed Nordholm might be a little upset if that is true, if that was the case, if he had thought he had a deal locked in to keep the guy, and then, you know, at the 11th hour, he gets a phone call telling him he wants $100,000 more per year, then I could see where maybe Ed Nordholm, out of spite a little bit, is trying to push back and give him a hard time too. And again, this is all based on one side, but Nordholm also said that the offer to Matt Hardy that was agreed to was a multiple of what he was making before. I don't think it was five times, but he made it sound like, you know, if it's a multiple of what you're making before, you're making it sound like it's at least double. So it sounds like they had a pretty substantial offer, and it was not that they were held up, but they were, you know, he was trying to get some more money out of it last minute. Maybe that's why on the GFW side, they're a little defensive about all this.
Yeah. And another thing too, guys, I read something about this earlier, maybe last week or this week, but I think the royalty piece was probably with that original agreement, because I would assume that GFW would want some type of royalty percentage. But then at that point, the Hardys can just say, hey, look, you know, we want to control the master. Boom. You know, here's the money. Yeah. We keep all of it, and we'll buy you out of whatever royalty that you want. So it's just kind of hard. And I've been trying to kind of look around and understand. I understand the fans wanting to just bash GFW and say, you guys are assholes, and just, you know, give it to them. But it's just like, we really have to look at it from that perspective. I hope that they can get it. I don't think the Hardys starving for money, so I think it's more of a principle thing. I wouldn't be surprised, I haven't read this anywhere, but I wouldn't be surprised if GFW is tacking on money, you know, for them calling them out on social media. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they're hitting them with, you know, a couple $100 or maybe a couple grand every time she says something crazy. if that was maybe part of an original agreement or something. But yeah, I just want to talk about that real quick. But another thing I wanted to bring up quickly, because I know you guys got a recap on the show, and I'll drop off the call. But one of the things that I want to get your guys' thoughts on is that I've been thinking lately to where, you know, Ray coming in, potentially you got John Morrison coming in, you got a lot of these guys leaving the company. I think one of the things that I'm thinking that GFW is looking to do is I think that they're with the booking, and I guess I should start there. So the 10% off of each booking, I think that they're trying to get, and this is just my thoughts, I think they're trying to get some of the wrestlers to get out of the agent pool, get rid of their agents, and then kind of have GFW take it in-house.
Ah.
So I think that would probably be more of an agent fee, because I was thinking about it. When I do my music, when I book shows for the artist I work for, when I book her shows, there's always a finance fee somewhat. Like for me, someone comes up to me to book a show, hey, Vinny, I get 10% of that booking, right? Or 5%, however the agreement works. So I think from GFW side, I think what they're trying to do is tell the wrestlers, hey, look, we're booking you and your contract's for X amount of dates with us, but if you're looking to go elsewhere to get booked, all right, we're gonna let you, you know, have people reach out to you, come to us with the acceptance, and then for us to set it up and us to get you situated, you know, we're going to take 10% of that. That way they can get the agents out of there. I've been working with an independent company here where I'm at, and we had Jeff Jarrett come in a few months ago. This was before he came back to Impact and the whole thing happened. This was late last year. And there was a somebody was helping Jarrett book the appearances. I don't know if it was Karen or somebody, but they were taking a cut from it. So I'm thinking, instead of them having these wrestlers who might not make a lot of money, hey, you got to cut it with your agent, you got to cut it with this guy and this guy, hey, let's just take the 10% and you're good to go. So maybe that's what's going on. So I want to get your guys' thoughts about that and see what you guys think of that maybe being the next setup for the contracts.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's something I hadn't really thought of, to be honest with you. But no, that's a really good point, that maybe they're trying to get some of the middlemen out of the way. And you know, like I said earlier, like I understand it. If they're doing a service for the wrestlers and they're doing a service, then I think taking 10% is fine. You know, to me, the way it came across last week, it almost appeared like they were taking 10% to take 10% without providing a service, just because they were GFW talent. They felt like, there's a value to you being on our TV, so we take 10% of your bookings. That seemed, you know, sleazy to me. But when you hear about the service they're providing, if that's the case, and the wrestlers want that service and they're getting it provided for, and there's, I'm sure, a lot of hassle they don't have to go through not having to deal with independent promotions themselves, then yeah, absolutely. You know, take the 10%. It's sort of like having an agent with the company without really having to have an agent. So yeah, and I think it's fine if they're getting a service provided for it. Andrew, how about you?
That is an interesting point. I thought of that from the agent's perspective. Yeah, I mean, I think what they need right now is just somebody, some wrestler to say like, hey, this is good. This is a good thing. It, you know, it frees up my time. I'm making the same amount or more due to it.
Yeah.
Just the fact that nobody is coming out and talking about it in a positive way makes it seem like it's shady. So maybe that'll change. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm thinking at the moment.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point. And I know, I'm sure if guys were upset, they wouldn't be re-signing. I mean, one thing we haven't touched on yet, Moose re-signed on a 3-year deal earlier this week, which is,
yeah,
I think, big news, because for a while, these guys were signing 1-year extensions, especially under the old regime where things, you know, didn't seem like they were on very stable footing. So if Moose was comfortable with it on a 3-year deal, and I'm sure he's going to be part of this booking system, then like you said, if somebody were to come out, though, and say, hey, this is good for me, I like this, I think it just helps from a perception standpoint.
Absolutely.
Anything else?
No, that's it. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate you taking the call. And yeah, we'll talk to you guys soon. Have a good night.
Awesome. Thanks,
man. Yeah, you too.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Awesome insight on this stuff, because especially having a background in it, it was great to get your thoughts and insight on the IP stuff and all that. That was great. Thanks for the call.
Yeah. Oh, anytime. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
All right, we are very late for a break, so we're going to take another break. When we come back, Andrew and I will run down the rest of the show that we haven't talked about yet. We talked about the main event, but we'll run down the rest of the show, and then we're going to get to our top three list in just a little bit as well, the three departures that hurt TNA the most. So we'll get to all of that right after the break. You are listening to the PW Torch Livecast post-GFW Impact Show.
Rich Van, formerly of the Primetime Friday Livecast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Van. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes. Places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week, if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the livecast are officially all right for diving.
All right, back in the PW Torch livecast, Mike McMahon, Andrew Socek with you. Andrew, let's run down the show, the stuff we haven't talked about yet. They started the show with a 6-man tag. EC3, Chris Adonis, and Eli Drake beat Eddie Edwards, Marufuji, and Moose in 16 minutes. What did you think of the opener here? They sort of went to it right at the beginning of the show. No talking segment. They went right to the ring with the 6-man tag. And as Kylan pointed out earlier, Orlando Mayor Buddy Dyer was the guest ring announcer for this match. They had something going on the last set of tapings that one of those days, I think that Wednesday taping was Impact Day in Orlando, so he was on hand doing guest ring announcing. But what was your thoughts on the opener here?
I thought the match itself was fine, but last week the show was kind of plagued by just throwing way too many random matches out there that just didn't seem to have any sort of consequence. That's kind of what I felt like here, even though I guess that made EC3 look stronger. For that purpose, it just felt too long, because right now we don't know who Marufuji is. They keep throwing him out there without any real background, so it's hard to get invested in him. And then Eli Drake and Chris Adonis have been defined down because of the whole Swole Mates thing, so it was fine, but it just didn't quite work for me. How about you?
I thought it was a good match for just as a match, but what really bothers me is it just feels like they're wasting Eli Drake. It feels like he's slipping through the cracks big time.
Yep.
Like you said, he's been involved with the Swole Mates thing for the last couple of weeks, and I've ranted and raved about that. They were in a prime spot, and he was in a prime spot against D'Angelo Williams at Slammiversary. Even though it was a celebrity thing, it was still that was an important spot for the company because they were going to be getting a lot of mainstream publicity out of that, and they trusted Eli Drake to be in that spot. So I thought that was good. But since Slammiversary, he's really been wasted. You know, he's been feuding with the Swole Mates, but really that's been more about Chris Adonis than Eli Drake. We haven't heard Drake talk much at all, and that's sort of his go-to. I mean, he's not bad in the ring, but he's so great on the mic, and he's barely spoken since Slammiversary. So This match was all about Moose and EC3, I couldn't help but feel that they're just letting Eli Drake flounder here for really no reason.
They really shouldn't have broken up him and Tyrus. I mean, yeah. Tyrus and Bruce Pritchard is a dud, and Eli Drake and Chris Adonis, they just don't have chemistry together. So, I felt that was a mistake on their end, especially how it's played out.
After that, they went to a talking segment that we've already talked about, but Bruce Pritchard, at the end of it, set up Matt Sydal against Bobby Lashley at Destination X. Important note here, he didn't say that the winner would get a world title shot. He said the winner would get the title shot that they desire. So I believe that means if Lashley wins, he gets a world title shot. And if Sydal wins, he gets an X Division title shot. They weren't really clear on that. But we talked about that segment a little earlier in the show. Then they went to Davey Richards versus Ishimori in a Super X Cup first round match. And Ishimori wins this in about 9 minutes. I thought this was one of the better matches in the first round, and one of I think probably my most favorite match in the show. I thought this was the best match of the show the Last Knockout Standing match was pretty good too, but a different style. I thought this was a really good match, and really sort of plays to what I think has been a pretty good tournament. I mean, a lot of people were sort of giving them grief over the Super X Cup at the beginning of it because it was just felt like a random tournament. But I think the video packages that they're playing before these matches, and then when you have a match like this, which had a blend in styles, there was some good mat wrestling, there was some good athletic moves. I think it's making, to me anyway, the Super X Cup feel more important than it was 3 weeks ago when we first learned about it and everybody was sort of snickering, like, what are they trying to do here?
Yeah, I agree with you. Best match on the show. I enjoyed it as well. It's another thing where, I mean, they've really dropped the ball on Davey Richards. I just wish they would pay more attention to details. Like, where is Angelina Love? Why did she just, suddenly disappear off the scene after they had months and months of that story? So it's just such like a dramatic turn without an explanation that it's hard for me to get into some of that stuff. But in and of itself, yeah, it was a good match, and it got better the longer it went.
Yeah, this felt to me like they knew Davey Richards was on his way out of the company, and it was like, hey, we're going to ignore some stuff, but we're going to do our best we can to sort of use him to get some other guys over on his way out. And I thought this was a good match, probably the best in the show by far, like we've said. So after that, they went to the last Knockout Standing match for the Knockouts Championship, and it was Sienna against Rosemary. Sienna gets the win in 16 minutes. Really, some really big spots here from Rosemary. She took an AK-47 off the ring apron. She ends up losing the match after getting knocked off the top turnbuckle to the outside through a table and just a really hard bump. I'm really not a big fan of the walking brawls, and especially these types of matches, I think, give us the same gimmicks a lot of times. You know, you get the tables, and then you get the chairs, and it can become redundant, but I thought this was a good match, and I thought it was entertaining. I thought there was some stuff here that we've never seen. Rosemary doing the reverse tarantula on the grandstand up in the fence, I think, was a cool visual. And my expectations weren't high going into this just because I thought it was going to be another walking brawl like we always see when we get these types of matches. But I thought this was a fun match. I enjoyed it.
I did too. It's almost too bad that they didn't put it in the main event, because just about every other title has taken the main event over the past few months. But the Knockouts have yet to receive that. It was strong. I mean, Rosemary, I think she's far and away their strongest Knockout from a character standpoint. So the only thing that kept me out of it a little bit was knowing she was not going to get the title back. So I'm just waiting for KM to get involved. But, otherwise, it was good. I mean, it's the type of match, it's the type of women's match you won't really see in WWE so much. for the women. So I thought it stood out in that way, and it went 16 minutes. So that's pretty long. And you know, something they would not have done even a year ago. So that is definitely an improvement, in this latest era.
From there, Jeremy Borash said that Moose versus EC3 for the Grand Championship would happen next week. Then Trevor Lee came to the ring. They again pointed out that Sanjay Dutt was barred from the building, despite the fact that he is the X Division champion. Trevor Lee, of course, stole the belt a couple of weeks ago. He still is wearing it. And then Trevor Lee fought Octagoncito. Trevor Lee said that he went to Mexico and brought in the best lucha wrestler in the world. Matthew said that people thought Lee was bringing in Rey Mysterio. That was the Rey Mysterio reference. But instead, Trevor Lee brought out Octagoncito, and Octagoncito won this match in 2 minutes via countout because Trevor Lee basically ran away. What was your thoughts? what were your thoughts on this one here? This is where, to me, the show started to go off the rails a little bit.
Yeah, this was bad. I mean, I along with LAX, I say it every week, like Trevor Lee is about the best underutilized thing going on this show. And just to have him lose this match in a comedy match is just dumb. I mean, they take like a step forward and then they just take two steps back. And I hate the comedy of like, okay, he's a short wrestler. I get it. You don't need to like that's a joke to the announcers. And it's not funny. Like they just keep hammering this point again and again and again. That kind of humor in wrestling is just beyond tired for me. So, I mean, either bring him in as a serious competitor or don't bring him in. I hate to see Trevor Lee lose that way. It's just, how does that build towards Sanjay Dutt in any meaningful way?
Yeah, it doesn't. You know, I think if you're trying to build Trevor Lee as a heel, you have him bring out Octagoncito. That's fine because Trevor Lee's the one that's handpicking him. But then Trevor Lee should have just beaten the crap out of Octagoncito. Really get some heat in the guy. He's a heel. You know, get some heat on him. The heat shouldn't just be that he stole a belt and is wearing it and won't take it off. Like I said, this is a comedy match. You know, this should have been Trevor Lee just beating the snot out of Octagoncito for 2 or 3 minutes and gets the win, and then he, you know, gloats over it, and he's standing over him with the belt, and then Sanjay runs down and makes the save, and at least Trevor Lee gets some heat there, you know, for beating up the mini that he brought to the ring. And this, I agree with you. I thought this was bad. I don't think it made anybody look good. It made Trevor Lee look goofy, and you don't want to. He shouldn't be booked to look goofy. You know, he went from the caveman to this goofy character. It's just they have no idea what they have in him, and they have no idea what to do with him. It's frustrating, especially when you know what he's capable of because you see the matches that he's had in other places. This is a guy that wrestled an hour and 40-minute main event and had people on the edge of their seats for all of it. And it's like here he is losing via countout in 2 minutes to a mini wrestler that he handpicked. You know, just it's just such a waste.
I thought it was also laughably bad that Sanjay Dutt ran out to get his title back and that a ref immediately caught up to him. Like, he's not fast enough to outrun a ref.
And then Bruce Pritchard kicked him out of the building again right after that.
Exactly. Yeah, just it's bad.
I didn't like it. I didn't like it either. Then Grado and Joseph Park came to the ring. Grado was going to propose to Laurel Van Ness. This will be her second proposal on the show in 7 months, but she never got to answer because it looked like she was going to say yes. But Kongo Kong came out. Grado just, there was no physicality here. Kong entered the ring and Grado just sort of ran away. It looked like he was going to fight, but then he ran away. Then Laurel Van Ness and Kongo Kong were, you know, talking in the ring for a little bit. She looked like she was trying to calm him down. At one point, Allie, for some reason, came out and was cheering Laurel Van Ness and Grado getting engaged. And Braxton Sutter came out and grabbed her and dragged her backstage. That was a very weird inclusion. I mean, first of all, Allie and Laurel Van Ness have sort of been feuding for like the last 4 months. And I don't know why she was so happy, number one. And then number two, I don't know why Braxton Sutter cared enough to just drag her backstage. It's very weird because they didn't show Allie coming down to the ring at all. All of a sudden, the camera pans back and she's on the ring apron cheering. So this whole thing I thought was a mess. just a whole bunch of confusion and nothing happened. I mean, the thing that struck me is they had 7 or 8 minutes of television, whatever it was, and at the end of it, literally nothing happened. Grado never got to ask Laurel, never got to propose because Kong interrupted it. Everybody was just sort of talking and calming down towards the end of it, and There was really a whole lot of nothing.
It felt like Vince Russo guest wrote this segment because of Ali's. Like, he would always do that. Two people, I don't know, two, three people having a beef, and then other people run in just to get them on TV, and they don't do anything, and they have served no purpose there. So that's what it felt like to me with Ali and Braxton Sutter.
But we got the mid-carders over, bro.
Yeah, exactly. We had been talking before a few months ago about Kongo Kong, you know, maybe protecting him, and someday he'll get into, you know, you could put him into the main event for a little bit to work a brief program. That doesn't feel like it's ever going to happen now. He's just doing more comedy. Sometimes Grado works for me. Sometimes he doesn't. This missed for me. It just feels like they're going to trying to force another wedding, which feels way too soon to do that. But yeah, it's a misuse of Kongo Kong. Like, you know, you could put anybody else in that role but him. And like you said, it didn't go anywhere. Wasn't that funny, and just kind of wasted time.
Totally agree. And then after that, they went to the main event. We already talked about the main event. Alberto El Patron in 10 minutes wins a gauntlet match over LAX after interference. And that ended the show. So we talked about the main event. If you're just tuning in now and you missed our thoughts on the main event, we kicked off the show with it. So you can go back and get our thoughts on the main event. Neither of us were big fans, though. Spoiler alert. and that about did it for this week's episode. I mean, I thought it was a pretty good show. You know, going back through it, I thought it was a pretty good show up until we got to that Trevor Lee match. I thought the last three segments, the Trevor Lee match, the Grado segment, and then the main event were all pretty poor. But up to that point, you know, up until about 9:30 or whatever it was, I thought this was shaping up to be a pretty good show. Just not a great ending.
Agreed. Yeah. The ending just destroyed the show for me. Cause that's the lasting memory of like, oh man, they already ruined LAX. I don't see how they can come back from this, cause Veterans of War and El Patron versus LAX, just, it doesn't do anything for me.
All right, Andrew and I are going to take another break. When we get back, we'll have our top three for this week. This week's category, the top three departures that have hurt TNA the most. We'll get back with our top three right after this. You're listening to the PW Torch Livecast post-GFW Impact Show.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, back here on the live cast, Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek with you. It's time for our top three. This week's top three, the top three departures that hurt TNA the most. This is a timely topic because we found out this week that Davey Richards has come to terms on his release with GFW. He's going to pursue, or is pursuing, a career as a doctor. And then there were some other departures that were confirmed over the last several days. Magnus confirmed that he was no longer with the company. He basically just came in to drop the title. I think we knew about that last week, because I think we discussed it last week. But we learned about that recently. And then Matt Morgan also confirmed that he was no longer with GFW. I believe the reasoning there was there was an understanding at one point that they were going to be taping their television on weekends, and Morgan has a regular 9-to-5 job now. So when it was determined that the television tapings were going to be still in the middle of the week, it was not something that he was able to do, so therefore he is no longer with the company. So first of all, what are your thoughts on those departures and how they could affect and either hurt or, you know, I don't think they necessarily help the show, but how do they affect the show moving forward?
I think from a storyline standpoint, it's really disappointing that Davey Richards is gone. I mean, you know, good for him if he's going to be a doctor. That's awesome. But just from like a pure storytelling episodic TV approach, that's really unfortunate. I mean, we've talked about it before, that even though the Richards-Edwards feud just kind of died out, it's still my top feud of the year in wrestling. And I mentioned it before, but I just hate how characters suddenly disappear. Maybe I haven't looked at the spoilers, so maybe they write them out somehow. I just feel if they had been more proactive and really just written him a finale, say at Bound for Glory, loser leaves town, loser retires, really, really build that up. Because as far as I know, I don't know if he's just going to have like a mesh, you know, lose it. It's just bad that they didn't get out of early 40s, but he looked good in his return. And I think he is somebody that could badly have filled in some time right now, because I would much rather see, say, Matt Morgan versus Bobby Lashley for a month or two program than Matt Sydal at this point. So he was underutilized in WWE. He never quite caught on in TNA. He got close one time with that big Kurt Angle Bound for Glory match years ago, but they never capitalized on that. So I was curious what they would do with him in this new era, and I guess that's already over. And again, another character that, from a storyline perspective, just kind of disappeared. What do you kind of think about those guys?
Yeah, I agree with you. It's all guys, I think, that right now could help them. And they need help. I mean, You said it. They need help. I mean, they need, especially at the babyface side, sort of at the top of the card, I think, whether it was Morgan or whether it was even Magnus, if you sort of programmed him as a babyface, and they sort of went back and forth there. But, excuse me, I think they could use those guys right now. Especially someone to feud with Lashley. I think that's where you're seeing it the most. I agree. And they all were names. I mean, if nothing else, they were names in the realm of Impact, in the realm of GFW. They were, excuse me here, they're all names. You know, they weren't necessarily main event people in WWE, but they were names for this company and for the show. They were viewed as originals. And I think that you could have used those guys right now, you know, for sure, especially Magnus and Morgan on the heavyweight side of things. And then Richards too. I mean, I'm not saying that that's not a loss. I mean, I would have loved to see them been able to do something and maybe even give the Wolves, you know, one more run as a tag team. You know, think of the type of match that Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards versus Santana and Ortiz could be right now. Like, I think that'd be a pretty good match. So I would have liked to see them reconcile that storyline and get them back together to the point where maybe they could have had that tag team title shot, even if they lost. I think it would have been a fun match, you know, those four guys. So I agree with you that I don't know what they're going to do with Richards. I hope they wrap it up and he doesn't just disappear, because I'm not a fan like you of when guys just vanish for no reason. But if they just came to an agreement on a release this week, you know, it may have been that they didn't know he was leaving officially. I mean, they may have known that he was leaving at some point this year, but maybe not after the last taping. So I guess we'll have to see how they finish that up.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, too. I just remembered this, how they kind of teased that Angelina Love was kind of calling the shots with him. So there could have been a redemption story eventually, like you said, and he teams up with Eddie Edwards. But doesn't look like we'll ever get to that.
Yeah, no, I agree. What did you have? Let's get to our list here. What did you have as your number three departure that hurt TNA or has hurt TNA? They're historical, not actually. As I look, all mine are fairly recent. But what was your number three?
So this may sound like a strange one, because I think he overstayed his welcome and didn't do nearly as much as he should have. But from a pure perception standpoint, I'm going to go Sting as my number three. The reason I'm doing that is because when he left, it really seemed like they were in trouble. Because Dixie Carter was a huge fan of Sting. She'd give him, you know, like $500,000. He'd show up, wrestle 20, 30 matches a year. And I think for a lot of casual fans, people who barely watched TNA, they knew Sting was there. And he was still like a guy that you could dream about in WWE. Of course, we know that didn't go so hot, but when I think of TNA, he's probably in the top 5 to 10 names I think of, but yeah, they never got that much out of him. He looked half motivated most of his run, but yeah, just when he left, it really seemed like they were in trouble. And shortly after, a lot of TNA originals started leaving.
That's a good one. Yeah, I hadn't really thought of that, but you're right. Given the timing at the time, you know, that did feel like a big loss for a company that was spiraling. At that point, my number three, I went with, for a couple of different reasons, I went with Matt and Jeff Hardy. Obviously, I think they could have done a lot more with the broken universe, even though we were getting sick of it. You know, we talked about it. It was getting old. But I think there were some legs. If they changed the direction, I think there were some still some legs there. There were some other areas where they could have gone. But ultimately, you know, the reason why I think it hurt them the most is just as we were talking earlier. You know, from a PR perspective, I think that they've been hurt by this move. How they've handled it, how the Hardys have handled it, in a point in time, like a really important time for the company, where they're trying to get their legs back. You know, I talked about last week how El Patron being a signing that came back to bite them was one that I had on my list from last week because of the timing of it and how this was an important period of time for this company as they're trying to build something and really get their footing and get their foundation built. And his legal troubles is just really bad timing. Well, this issue with Matt and Jeff Hardy, not only losing them on your show, even if you weren't doing the Broken Universe, just they're good guys to have around. You know, they're stars. So you lose two stars on your roster, and then all of the fallout with the IP arguments and the fights and the bickering and people talking about how they're not going to watch the show until the Hardys get the IP. And it's just terrible timing. And from a departure that just hurt the company, I think both the product and from a PR standpoint, this departure has hurt them. There's no doubt about it.
I agree. That's a really good pick. Yeah. Like you said, man, it has brought on so much trouble because it wasn't a clean breakup. It was unfortunate all around because I don't know about you, but the Hardys just bore me to tears in WWE. I mean, they just did like a Sonic commercial where they're selling hot dogs.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I mean, the thing is they never really moved into the heavyweight division realm. They were doing feuding with each other and then they were feuding with other tag teams. So, especially right now, yeah, they would help out that show so much. Even though we were both getting tired of that act, it would still beat the lack of depth and star power that the show has right now.
I mean, even if they got out of the Broken Brilliance thing, I think you could have easily, and maybe you could have done it with Matt too, but I think you could have easily put Jeff right back in your world title picture right away.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Who did you have as your number two?
Number two, I'm going with somebody who basically left at the same time as them, Drew Galloway.
Great pick.
He is not.
I didn't even think of him. That's really a great pick.
Oh, good. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I struggled whether I should put him on or not just because he's not like a TNA guy. You don't really think of him with TNA. But again, if he was I think the plan was that he was going to be what El Patron was. So he was going to be the babyface champion of the company, and he would be 1,000 times better than El Patron right now. He is somebody that doesn't, even though you could have said he's a WWE has-been, he completely turned his career around on the indie scene. He wouldn't feel like a leftover. He'd feel like this hot, exciting babyface on GFW who could lead them into this new era potentially, or at least that's how you should build him. Yeah, I think him losing him, and then he's good in NXT, but yeah, it's they're not getting as much out of him as they should be over in WWE, and GFW could just badly use him right now as a goodwill gesture, and he would have not brought on 1/1000th of the PR nightmare that El Patron has.
Totally agree. Yeah, I think probably because it's so fresh, I didn't even really think of him. His departure almost sort of got lost with the Hardy departure, but yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one. That's a really good point. I went with another relatively recent guy as well, and that's Samoa Joe. And although, you know, I feel like when Samoa Joe left the company, I feel like there wasn't really a whole lot left for him to do. He had been in TNA for such a long period of time. And he had sort of wrestled everybody and he had done everything. But, losing him, I think, was losing a big piece. We obviously saw that he still has plenty of left in the tank. I mean, the guy just had a really good match with Brock Lesnar. He's about to headline the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, or one of four guys that are going to. So he's a star, and he was TNA's star. And I think, you know, did he need some time off? Did he need to get away from the company for a little bit? I think so, because it just he was starting to feel a little stale towards the end. But instead of losing him as a free agent, I would have felt a lot better about it if he just, you know, if they gave him a 3 month or a 6 month vacation and then bring him back, and you could put him, he'd feel fresh again and right at the top of the card, because he never really had much of a break in TNA. He just was full bore, you know, full throttle from the second he got there. So I understand why he wanted to move on. I could even understand why maybe TNA wasn't really that interested towards the end, because he had done everything and he was certainly commanding a lot of money. I'm sure he's one of their highest paid guys, but you look back on it, you look at where he is now, and the fact that, hey, they could use someone at the top of the heavyweight division right now in TNA, I think they really miss Samoa Joe.
Oh, exactly. Especially if they could motivate him like he is now. Yeah, when he left the company, man, he was like the third most important member of the Beatdown Clan. It just didn't feel right seeing him in that group and playing second fiddle to MVP. Yeah, he was just losing meaningless matches. He didn't look motivated. He looked kind of beat up, and then he just didn't care. But man, I mean, he is definitely one of the people you think of when you think of TNA. He came onto the scene so hot, so great for the first couple of years. And then I just imagine politics and all these WCW and WWE guys leapfrogging him. I'm sure that just mentally beats you down after a while. So, but yeah, I mean, maybe GFW would feel so much more interesting if he was still there.
I mean, I just feel like, look at Slammiversary. I would have been so more excited about a Lashley Samoa Joe main event for the world title than Lashley El Patron.
Yeah, that would be great.
I mean, you talk about just like a kick ass match, man. They would beat the crap out of each other, but that'd be fun. You know, that'd be a really fun main event.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get
Did
it.
Did they
though.
Ever go at it in TNA?
You know, I can't recall. They may have, just because Joe was there for so long and Lashley was there for so long. I'm sure they did at some point. On a big stage like that, at an important time in the company where they're trying to find their guy, and Joe's been, and he was out of the title picture for so long in TNA, and like you said, sort of an afterthought. I think you could have told a really, really good redemption story with him, you know, this year coming back and going after the title and facing Lashley. So, yeah, that's why I added to my number two. Who'd you have as your number one?
Number one, I got to go AJ Styles. Man, he was there from the very beginning. He just felt more TNA to me than anybody else. And unlike Joe, he was still entertaining at the end. Not that I blame Joe, but man, I think we talked about this a month ago, but I was like finally starting to buy into AJ Styles as a true main event talent when he was kind of doing his, I don't know, like Sting-like angle where he left and came back and he was like a free agent. But man, AJ Styles and GFW right now would be so much better and be a huge loss for WWE. But yeah, when he left, that really felt like, to me, that felt like it was over. You know, if they can't afford AJ Styles anymore, and you know, who's next? And it just felt like the dominoes are falling right after that. But yeah, to me, he's probably the top guy I think of still when I think of TNA.
This might be the first time this has happened, but I have the same number one. We are in total agreement.
Oh.
Yeah. And for every reason you just said. You know, we're talking about a guy that at the time and still right now is in the handful of guys that I think you would categorize as the best in the world at what he's doing. Losing that guy at the time hurt. You looking back on it, losing him, you know, not having him now certainly hurts. So there's been a few, but yeah, AJ Styles to me is by far the one that has hurt them the most. And it's, if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong, it was just money. It just came down to money.
Yeah.
And they, at the time, they didn't have any. And Styles went out. And you know what? Credit to him. Because he was the first guy that really went out and started to prove that you don't need to be with WWE. You don't need to be with TNA. You could be a free agent and still make money. And we've seen plenty of guys do it now. Look at what Cody Rhodes has been doing for the last year. AJ was the first one. Really, he was the first one that went out and made it on his own. And, you know, now he's doing some really good stuff in WWE as well. And I hope him and Shinsuke get together at some point here. But, I think by far the biggest one that has come back to hurt them is the loss of AJ Styles.
Yeah, I mean, if he was just doing the work he's doing now in WWE and just, you know, continuing that on in GFW, again, there would just be so much more goodwill to that company. He's somebody that is a true star, you know, and we all, and people always thought he could be just as good in WWE if given the chance, and he's proven that. And they're just really lacking somebody right, like that right now, like a guy that's good enough to go to WWE, but maybe just doesn't want to because he's loyal to TNA, GFW. So, yeah, just a big loss.
Absolutely. All right, we got to take one more break. When we come back, Andrew and I will wrap up this show, and we'll be right back. So thank you for – well, I shouldn't say goodbye yet. We're not done. So we'll be right back to wrap things up right after the break here in the post-GFW Impact Livecast.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
All right, Andrew, anything else you want to add before we get out of here this week?
I did not know that commercial existed, so that's just what I was going to plug.
Well, there we go. Wade did it for you.
Yeah. PWPodcast.com, updated every day with new quick quotes from wrestlers all around the world and wrestling recaps, just like wrestling podcast recaps, just like Wade said. Otherwise, I will have the Impact hits and misses tomorrow on the Torch. So check that out in the probably early afternoon.
I know you can follow Andrew on Twitter at Andrew Socek. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon PW. My Impact report is up on the site right now. We also have a report up on the conference call yesterday with Bruce Pritchard and Dutch Mantel. We have run out of time, so we didn't really have time to talk about it. Although, you know what? We could talk a little bit about that on the VIP after show. If you go PW Torch VIP, you will get access to a whole bunch of stuff. The best stuff in the world if you're a wrestling fan, believe me. You'll have access to the PW Torch newsletter. You'll have access to a bunch of VIP exclusive audio. If you like this show, you will love PW Torch VIP. Wade's going to give you some details before we get out of here. Also, though, for VIP members, Andrew and I are going to record a VIP after show as soon as we're done. So on the feed of the VIP audio feed tomorrow, you will see our VIP after show. I know we could talk a little bit about the conference call because we didn't get a chance to do it on the show here tonight. And then also, we're going to talk some Shinsuke Nakamura versus John Cena, which they announced for SmackDown on Tuesday. Are we excited about this match? What could it lead to? What could the finish be? And just sort of overall, what WWE has done with Shinsuke. So you'll hear that if you're a VIP member tomorrow on the VIP after show. And you can check out all this other cool VIP stuff that you get by going VIP. You can go VIP at pwtorch.com/govip. So thank you for listening to this week's edition of the Post-GFW Impact Livecast. Again, you can follow Andrew on Twitter at Andrew Socek. You can follow me on Twitter at Mike McMahon PW. Thank you guys for calling. Thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you next week right here in the PW Torch Livecast.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Dog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Killer Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Killer Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the live cast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.